What if you could get inside success secrets from someone at the very top of her field? Well, now you can from the new book, 15 Lies Women Are Told at Work and the Truth We Need to Succeed by Bonnie Hammer. Bonnie rose from an entry-level job as a production assistant to become the vice chair of NBC Universal. The Hollywood Reporter has called her the most powerful woman in entertainment. Here she is to share key insights.
My name is Bonnie Hammer, and I'm the author of 15 Lies Women Are Told at Work and the Truth We Need to Succeed. I've spent much of my life as a working woman. I've been everything from an assistant to the four-legged tail-wagging star of a kids' TV show to greenlighting top TV series like Suits, Battlestar Galactica, and Mr. Robot, to the vice chair of NBC Universal. In those years, I've heard every bit of career advice about what and how women should be at work. And most of it, frankly, is BS. That's why I wrote this book. Rooted in pithy mantras and maxims, today's career advice is taught to women like a time-tested playbook. But in truth, much of what you've been told is a dangerous and dangerously cliched instruction manual for the modern workplace and world. So in 15 Lies, I flip the script. I dismantle the lies and tell the truth as I see it. Then I share how you can nail it, pun intended, in your own life. Here are six of those truths, or six key insights, from my book. Truth number one. Don't follow your dreams, follow the opportunities. When it comes to careers, follow your dreams can be nightmare advice. For starters, we usually discover our dreams long before we enter the workplace, through praise from parents, career day at school, a teenage hobby, or a favorite college course. Chances are, we have little idea what a career in that dream industry or field looks like, or whether we'll like doing it. And just like we can't be what we can't see, we can't dream what we don't know. So our dreams have an infinite number of blind spots, made up of every industry we haven't yet worked in, every company we haven't yet encountered, and every job we haven't tried doing ourselves, not to mention all the industries, companies, and jobs that don't yet exist. The possibilities and therefore our blind spots are truly endless. There's nothing wrong with loving something so much we want to make a living from it, but if we're addicted to our dreams, we risk sleepwalking through life and hitting snooze on a host of bigger, better opportunities that might come our way. Once we're willing to ditch the dream, though, we have the opportunity to follow opportunities. That's what I did at the start of my career. In the first few years after college, I pursued my passion for photography with a passion, working jobs in darkrooms, photo studios, photo editing, and photojournalism. Then, in a twist of fate, I landed an internship during grad school at the local PBS affiliate in Boston, taking pictures of the cast of a new kids' TV show. And in a second twist of fate, when three production assistants got fired in a single day, I was offered a full-time job. At the time, I knew almost nothing about the industry and had never considered entering it for real. But there was something in the air that intrigued me. Plus, I needed a job. So I weighed my options, the dream that hadn't really gotten me anywhere, versus the opportunity that might take me God knows where. I said yes to the offer and said goodbye to a career in photography. The rest, as they say in the industry that I've worked in ever since, is history. 5 decades later, the camera is still my best friend. It's just not my boss. Like me, the happiest and most fulfilled people I know today aren't working their dream jobs. We're working jobs we never could have dreamed of at the start of our careers. But we were open to opportunities that came our way, even when they came out of left field. Because life's most exciting and least expected adventures are found when we refuse to let what we've previously imagined limit us. Truth number two, know your worth. More like, work on your worth. In a world where too many of us undervalue, undersell, and underestimate ourselves, know your worth can feel like the perfect antidote. But when we're young and inexperienced, most of us are worthless, and we should expect to be treated that way, at least on the job. I'm talking about professional worth, not personal worth, which we're all born with. It's easy to confuse the two, but conflating our value on the job with our value off of it is like sticking our hand out the window in New York and thinking it'll tell us the temperature in New Delhi. Unfortunately, too many entry-level and early career employees seem to have missed this memo. So they show up to entry-level jobs and grunt at being given grunt work, convinced they deserve better. Better pay, fewer hours, and more exciting assignments right from the start. At work, though, our worth isn't intrinsic. Instead, it's earned. We become worthy by proving ourselves, by showing up early, staying late if needed, saying yes to every opportunity, finding stretch assignments to expand our skill set and scope, and staying positive through it all. That's how I succeeded in my first real TV job. As the most junior person on the team, I was tasked with following an untrained dog, a Nepo canine hire, who probably earned more than me, around the set of a kids show and picking up his poop. My responsibility was shit. Literally. With two academic degrees by then, it was hard not to feel like the work was beneath me. But I also felt extremely lucky to have broken into the TV industry at all. So I acted like a college student gunning toward an honors degree in pet sitting, and I treated each doggy bag I filled like an extra credit opportunity. I plastered a smile on my face, picked up the crap, and paid my dues. When an associate producer position opened up, I was the one who got promoted. After all, I'd already proven I could take one and tackle number two for the team. There's no getting around it. On the job, putting in the work is how we prove our worth. It takes time, effort, consistency, and a great attitude. But eventually, you'll find that it's all worth it. Truth number three. When it comes to mentors, while it's nice to have friends in high places, it's better to have a foil who challenges you at every level. We might not know who legendary boxer Muhammad Ali was if not for Sonny Liston, Joe Frazier, and George Foreman, tough opponents who pushed him to greatness. And I, Bonnie Hammer, probably wouldn't have written this book or had my career without a few challengers of my own. There's a misconception that the best mentors are essentially friends in high places at work, powerful, well-connected allies who root for us at every step and help us move up the ranks. Those mentors do exist. They're what I call supportive mentors. But at work, there's no elevator to success. If we want to get to the top, we need to climb. And the mentors who teach us how are not cheerleaders. They are more like drill sergeants, or what I call challenging mentors. These mentors put the tough in tough love, and it really is tough. They give us feedback that's often hard to hear. They critique and oppose us like sparring partners, and they constantly push us because they know what we're capable of, even when we don't. At every stage of my career and life, I've had challenging mentors. Growing up, my older brother played this role. His mantra still rings in my head: when things get tough, get tougher. Then there was the toughest mentor of my career, my boss while running the Sci-Fi Channel, who was so demanding and antagonizing that I painted his name on the 6-foot punching bag I used for my weekend kickboxing class. In the moment, these challenging mentors rarely made me feel good. They questioned everything I did. But over time, they all, without doubt, made me better and were all monumental and instrumental in the success of my professional journey. That's why My number one piece of career advice is to find a mentor you can hate. A foil, not a friend. A challenger, not a supporter. And if you don't know how to spot one in the wild, use this trick. Look for the truth tellers. That's what sets this kind of mentor apart. They won't lie to protect us from whatever reality we have to face. They tell us the truth, even if it hurts, because they know it will help us in the long run. When we're wrong, they make sure we know, and they don't let up until we get it right. Oh, and don't worry about formalizing or labeling the relationship or saying, "This is my mentor." That part isn't important. Down the line, once it walks like a mentor and talks like a mentor, you can call it whatever the hell you want. Truth number 4. Do sweat the small stuff. If someone doesn't sweat the small stuff in life, they're probably still doing small stuff with life. Harsh words, I know, but it's true, especially when it comes to our careers. Forget what our culture preaches. In practice, we don't respect people who focus only on the big picture and blow off the rest. On the contrary, those who end up leading, succeeding, and inspiring us are the people who pay attention to even the minor details and understand the big impact even littlest gestures can have, like sending a thank you note after an interview, proofreading a document multiple times before sharing it, learning the names of support staff others might ignore, arriving 5 minutes early to a meeting and noticing someone couldn't make it, and offering to share your notes or fill them in. In my industry, entertainment, the small stuff is everything. Think about your favorite show. A well-placed prop can make a scene. A perfectly timed joke can make an episode. Nuances in an actor's facial expressions can make a performance. A carefully chosen costume can make a character. A meticulously crafted set can make a world. That's why writers obsess over every word of dialogue. Directors spend hours visualizing a single scene, and actors rehearse their lines dozens, if not hundreds, of times. For good and bad, sweating the small stuff is just who I am. The words, "it's no big deal," aren't in my vocabulary. Focusing on the nitty-gritty comes naturally to me. And if it doesn't come naturally to you, that's okay. It's not too hard to learn or do. In 15 Lies, I provide achievable tips and tricks that anyone can follow. But in order to sweat the small stuff, you have to understand how much it matters, on the job and off. Just like attentiveness, consideration, and care could make or break a career, they can make or break a friendship, a marriage, or even a membership to your favorite gym. There's no getting around it. The small stuff makes a big difference. It is the big stuff, and who we are in the grand scheme of things is determined by nothing more than the little things we do. They all add up. Truth number 5. Talk is not cheap. It's the most valuable currency we have. Almost as soon as we learn to talk, we're told, "Talk is cheap." By adulthood, we probably understand this isn't true. Words carry weight, which is why political campaigns are won and lost over debates, movies succeed or flop based on buzz, and "we need to talk" are the 4 scariest words in any relationship. Still, we underestimate just how much our words matter. Otherwise, we treat what we say and how we say it with a lot more care, consideration, and concern. While we know not to flat-out lie, to some extent, we're all guilty of occasional exaggerations and empty rhetoric. But inaccuracies add up, and eventually, they cost us our integrity. If our word becomes worthless, we can't be trusted. That's why, in business as in life, our word is everything. What's more, our words can also get us almost anything. Far from being cheap, they really are our most valuable currency. They can get us raises, promotions, access to unreachable individuals and opportunities, a new seat after a canceled flight, and even dinner reservations at fully booked restaurants. But way too often, people are afraid to ask, or when they do, they end up blowing the opportunity. That's why, even as adults, we should follow that timeless toddler dictum. If you want something, use your words. And we have to use them right. That means being respectful but direct, phrasing requests skillfully rather than trying to box someone in, and using kindness and confidence, not arrogance and entitlement, in our delivery. If we don't get the answer we want, it isn't the end of the world. In my rule book, yes always means yes. Take it and stop talking. No, on the other hand, often simply means not now, not here, not me. Take it as a challenge, not as a dead end, to do more homework to get to yes. Of course, using our words isn't always serious business. Sometimes a well-placed joke is just the thing to break the ice, bridge a divide, make a point, or win over an audience. Far from unprofessional, research suggests using humor at work makes us seem more competent and confident. The key is to joke at our own expense, not at others. But even the best joke falls flat if we fail to read the room, which is where listening comes in. Pay attention, make eye contact, and ask thoughtful follow-up questions. Let the other person talk. Listen before leaping into action. If our words are our most valuable currency, then how we spend them really matters. For good and bad, they echo long after we leave a room. They tell whomever we're talking to a lot about our personality, priorities, even our potential. All this talk is just to say, there's a boundless upside to wielding our words well, and a high price to pay when we don't. Truth number 6. The only time you could have it all is in hindsight. Can women have it all? I usually answer that question by saying, the only place a woman can have everything is on a bagel. But at the risk of joining feminism's favorite debate, my answer is no. In fact, I'd argue that up to now, most people have done a terrible job of even defining what it means to have it all. Ironically, the term having it all was popularized by the former editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan magazine, who famously never wanted kids and never had them. Instead, she preached a gospel of, in her own words, love, success, sex, and money. To her, having it all was a way of rebelling against traditional expectations for women. But today, having it all has become something far worse. A new set of heightened expectations and expanded norms that women do everything. This one phrase is now shorthand for successfully balancing the demands of career, motherhood, and partnership. And anyone who's tried to do that has probably also failed, even those who seem like they've achieved the holy trinity of great marriage, great kids, and great job. I'm one of them. On the outside, it probably looks like I have it all, which is why I'm so often asked how I managed to get it done. But at the office, I always feel like I'm cheating on my family. At home or on vacation, I feel like I'm cheating on my colleagues. Even now, as an empty nester, I often feel like I'm cheating on my dogs. My balancing act is just that, an act. If it's convincing, that's only because I've spent most of my career around actors and learned from the best. And even still, I had to make plenty of sacrifices along the way, in my personal and professional lives, to get where I am today. That's why I say that the only time women can have it all is in hindsight. In the moment and in reality, what we actually have are choices. This is true of men too. The difference is that society doesn't put the same pressure on them to defy reality. That might feel limiting, but it's actually freeing. After all, as soon as we realize it's not possible to have it all, and that even the women who look like they do, don't, we can take agency over our lives. And remember, everyone's all is different. Be free to choose your all. We can and should choose what's important to us and prioritize that. Once you decide your all, I'd like to help you get there. With 15 Lies, I've laid out a portable mentorship designed to help you find your most important truths, no matter where you are in your career and your life. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy my book, 15 Lies Women Are Told at Work and the Truth We Need to Succeed.
Thank you, Bonnie. That was Big Ideas from 15 Lies Women Are Told at Work and the Truth We Need to Succeed by Bonnie Hammer. You might also like our book bite for The Power Code, More Joy, Less Ego, Maximum Impact for Women and Everyone by Caddy Kay and Claire Shipman. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.